This is the John Favreau's My Daddy podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya. Hi, Monica.
Honk. That's the sound that the geese make.
I think we have started every episode with us cackling.
Ah, it's because we always play the theme song right before, and the theme song makes us giggle.
Yeah.
It's funny. If you haven't taken a listen to like the full theme song, it's the very first thing on our.
I guess it's considered the first like episode.
But the first episode is not that.
It's not an actual episode.
I guess it would be considered like the first bonus episode, if you will.
Sure. It was a teaser.
A teaser.
We looked at our audience and said, we're going to tease you.
A tease.
How are you?
I'm good. It is spooky time.
It is spooky time despite being 100 degrees.
Yeah, I'm trying incessantly to make sure that like I'm prepared for spooky times.
Yeah.
I bought the pumpkin from Trader Joe's. I bought the candle.
Amazing. What scent is the candle?
Woodland cypress and bergamot.
Ooh.
Harry Potter.
Every day when I get up for work, because I just have to sit in the middle of my living room and work the whole day, I shut all the curtains and blast the AC. And then light some sort of scented candle. Lately, I've been lighting my oatmeal cookie candle.
Ooh.
That I got when I worked at Anthropology.
Shout out Anthro.
Sponsor us. Monica, who are we talking about today?
We're talking about Ryan Gosling.
Ryan.
Honk.
Yeah, that, in case you didn't know, that's why Monica made that noise at the top of this.
It's the sound that geese make. They
it
go,
is.
Ang.
Maybe it's also a sound that Ryan Gosling makes.
Maybe he makes the sound.
Maybe he goes anytime like, he stubs his toe, he goes.
Anytime he fails at like earning an Oscar, he goes.
Anyway,
this today of days is Ryan Gosling, Ryan Gosling. Jessica, fake it away.
Ryan Gosling is a Canadian actor, writer, director, and musician who made his television debut in 1993 at the age of 12 in the revival of The Mickey Mouse Club.
Oh, Canada, oh, Canada.
He continued doing television work and developing an accent that he based off of Marlon Brando in order to get rid of his Canadian accent.
Oh, you don't
say. In case you ever looked at Ryan Gosling and said, you're Canadian, why do you talk like that? This is why. Until his feature film debut in a supporting role in Remember the Titans in 2000, quickly followed by his first starring role as a young Jewish neo-Nazi in 2001's The Believer. Gosling came to the attention of mainstream audiences in 2004's The Notebook, received his first Oscar nomination for Half Nelson in 2006, and since then has been considered to be one of the best contemporary actors. He has been nominated for 2 Academy Awards, a BAFTA, 4 SAG Awards, and 5 Golden Globes, one of which he won for his role in La La Land. He has been in a relationship with actress Eva Mendes since 2011, and they are the literal daddies to 2 daughters.
2 daughters.
2 beautiful daughters.
2 geeslings. Gooselings, if you will.
I wonder if their last name is Goosling.
Probably. Oh, Ryan.
I love Ryan.
I love Ryan.
He's a cutie.
He was a cutie. You know what's so funny is he wasn't always a cutie. He was kind of an ugly duckling.
See, I have always found him attractive since day one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just how it is for me. But I understand people who are like, he's not as hot as everyone thinks he is.
That's true. I think in the beginning he wasn't. I find him attractive as like an older man.
I mean, sure.
More so than like him as a young boy in like The Notebook or something.
See, I was incredibly obsessed with him. In the
okay. Right. You like cut him out of your 17 magazine and like
no, that
put him
was
up
Zac
on your
Efron.
Walls. Right. So even he didn't make the cut.
No, I just don't think Ryan Gosling was in the magazines I was reading.
In the magazines? What magazines were you reading?
Like teen magazines.
Like Teen Bop? Tiger Beat?
Maybe. I don't
17?
Know.
17? Cosmo Teen?
Probably Cosmo.
Teen Vogue? Teen.
Monica knows all these magazine names because Teen. She still reads them.
No! I'm sad to say I still read the print edition of Bon Appetit.
I also do that, and I read Vanity Fair.
Yeah. We probably shouldn't be supporting Condé Nast anymore. Condé Nasty, if you will. Racist fucks.
This has been a... This has been a rant.
Sorry. To get off track, back to the goose. The main goose. The top goose, if you will. We're not going to be talking about La La Land.
No.
Simply because we don't want to.
Let's get that out of the way. We don't feel like it. I like La La Land.
We do what we want.
I just don't have much to say about his performance.
Other than he tried really hard to sing, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, like he was good. I just don't have much to say, you know?
He can really hold his own in the streets of Los Angeles.
Hell yeah. But what we are going to start with is probably
everyone's favorite, probably.
Everyone had their intro to Ryan Gosling.
You've seen this movie. If you haven't seen this movie, your neighbor's seen this movie. Someone you know has seen this movie. You are 1 degree away, I guarantee you, 1 degree of separation away from someone who has seen this movie. And this movie is in The Notebook.
Yeah, it's The Notebook.
The Notebook. The Notebook, written by Jan Sardi and Jeremy Levin, based on the novel by Nicholas Sparks, who pierced all of our hearts in our teens. May he
rest so in peace. So many good books to movies.
We've
from
just
that
stopped
man.
Reading him. Directed by Nick Cassavetes. Duke, played by James Garner, an elderly man in a nursing home, reads a story to a fellow nursing home resident, played by Gina Rowlands, and tells her the story of two young lovers in the 1940s. These two lovers, Noah, played by Ryan Gosling, and Allie, played by Rachel McAdams, are different in every way but madly in love. However, Allie's upper-class rich bitch parents disapprove of Noah's lower-class standing and force them to break up. Further separated by World War II, the two are forced to continue their lives separately, both thinking that the other no longer loves them. But when Noah's face appears in the newspaper 7 years after their meeting, Allie begins to question a new life entirely. And thus, the plot of The Notebook.
It's a thick plot. There's a lot of elements.
It's a thicky boy. There's war. There's accents. There's class wars.
Oh my God.
There's James Marsden in a full body cast.
He looks so good in that movie.
In a uniform. Mm-hmm. This was his X-Men days. So he was he was built.
He looked fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. And also really refreshing that his role in it wasn't that of a terrible man.
That's true.
It would have been so easy for them to just be it's the 40s. And so he is rich and he sucks. But instead, he was an actual nice, good man who valued Allie and her mind and her aspirations, and so.
And he happened to be rich. He happened to be rich.
Yeah,
rich.
Yeah, yeah.
Enough about James Marsden. So, Ryan Gosling in this film, he's a young boy. I forget how old he was in this film.
Well, they filmed it in 2003. He was born in 1981. Ryan Gosling was 23 when they filmed, I'm assuming.
He was 23 when they filmed, we're assuming. And he was a young boy. He looked all crooked and shit.
Yeah, I mean, his face didn't have the, chiseled definition it has now.
He didn't, grow into his face. Does that make sense? It was like his head was a little too big for his body.
I disagree, but but shit. I can see where you're coming from. I always thought that he was super fucking cute in this movie, but it's funny because they cast him. I mean, one, because he was talented, but also because the director, Nick Cassavetes, who is actually the son of Gina Rowlands. I don't know if you knew that.
No way.
Yeah. So because she was married to, his dad, the, other Cassavetes, what's his name? The famous one.
Oh my God.
Okay. I just want to start off by saying that I think, obviously Ryan Gosling is a good actor. I don't think anyone, denies that. Do you?
Yes. I'm just kidding. He's a good actor. He's a good actor. Don't come for me.
But he's also one of those actors where I'm I've seen so many of his movies, but I can't really put my finger on what makes him so good. You know?
I think it's his honesty.
Yeah. And I also think he has this other weird, like,
je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, he has something in like his eyes when he's acting.
Yes, he could totally act in a mask for sure.
He could act in a mask. He could be in a fucking silent movie, and I'd be like, I know exactly what you're saying. You can see everything in this man's eyes.
He was basically in a silent movie. In <That's> Drive.
You know, this is true. Drive, a quiet film. Really quiet film.
It's a hush-hush, night-night film.
Perfect film to go sleepy time to. But... yeah, he's got these eyes that fucking tell the audience everything. And when you first meet his character in The Notebook, he's like at that carnival and he's watching Allie play bumper cars.
Which you think is kind of creepy at the beginning.
Yeah, like if we're being real, he is like a little stalkery.
Very stalkery.
Because he just like watches her and like just stares really intensely at her.
Uh-huh.
And then fucking jumps on that Ferris wheel.
Oh,
and
he's like, my.
He's like, you have to go out with me. And she's like, no, go out with me.
She's like, no, I don't. What's wrong with you?
And then she pulls down his pants. So you want to go out with me? I want to go out with you.
You know, their chemistry is fucking undeniable in this film.
Yeah.
What I will say is they filmed the like 7 years later scenes mm-hmm. at first.
Yeah.
So they were a little bit more awkward in those scenes. But in the beginning, those like when they're younger scenes, mm-hmm. they're like on top of each other. Like they like can't get their hands off of each other. These wild chitlins.
But it's actually funny because like that you always hear that story about how they fucking hated each other during filming.
I know.
And how Ryan Gosling like had to talk to the director and be like, can you please cast someone else?
Oh my God.
And then they ended up fucking dating after
I
that.
Know. I think it was sort of the same dynamic that like Noah and Ali had where they like fucking hated each other but also loved each other because they had passion.
Yeah, like they say, there's that whole montage of them over the summer and
they're like James Garner
is narrating because he's reading to older Allie, and he's like, they couldn't have been more different, but they loved each other like mad.
They couldn't have been more different people, but they couldn't keep their freaking fingies off of each other.
But like, I don't know, there are a lot of movies that depict young love, and I think this one does it like supremely well.
Oh yeah. There's fucking 17. Like they're children.
They're children, but they're like absolutely obsessed with each other.
Obsessed. And they don't have anything else to do.
No, nothing
like,
else to do.
Presumably he has like a part-time job at the at the lumber yard.
Yeah.
She's like free because it's her summer vacation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she still has her like etiquette classes and
Latin and lessons.
Latin
and ballet lessons.
And horseback riding.
You know, whatever the fuck someone does in Charleston
literally,
in 1940.
In back at the plantation. First of all, can we just talk about the fact that this fucker built this woman a house for like the entirety of those 7 years that they were apart?
Yeah. So like Noah kept that fucking flame going.
He kept
the torch burning for Allie. Which, you know, like he is kind of just like a miserable fuck all those years.
He really
and
is.
And I do genuinely feel bad for that girl, May, that he just
who
like
was like the widow.
Yeah, the war widow
the
who
war
he sleeps
widow.
With. And she he's made it so clear to her that
he
like she just
shit.
Like isn't the one, but she is sad because she's a war widow. Oh my God, that part is so sad.
And then when fucking she wants to meet Allie because she knows that she's the mm-hmm. one, and she just wants to see what it's like for two people to be in love again because she misses her husband because he's dead because she's a war widow.
Yeah. I think that's a really underrated element of the movie is like mm-hmm. that dynamic between mm-hmm. May and Noah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's really like essential to.
I think it's really real. Like you don't talk. Okay, so like something that I really love about this movie is, I mean, it's a sweeping love story, right? Like there is no bigger tearjerker than The Notebook.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really, really real in how it portrays like the whole concept of like waiting for someone.
Yeah.
Right. They didn't wait for each other.
No.
I mean, you would think like, oh, you know, true love, they'll totally just like sit there and like wait for each other and like pine after each other and try and look for each other, like after, you know, after she's done with school or like after he's done with the war, like you would think. But no, like their lives moved on, even though like more so Noah's like life didn't really move on. Like he kept like stuck in his ways, but like Allie like found someone else and like fell in love with someone else, and like she was truly in love with, you know, James Marsden's character.
Yeah.
It wasn't that she was like
That's such a rich Southern name.
I hate that name. Lawn. She fell in love with him.
Yeah.
And it was a real love and it was a true love. And I think that that's a really honest depiction of something like that, where like you really can move on, like you really can find someone else, even though your true love is gone.
Or just the concept of like you can have multiple true loves.
You totally can
have differences, because obviously her relationship with Lon was different from her relationship with Noah.
It was more mature, I would say.
Yeah, well, and also like it lacked a certain element of like fiery passion, because I mean, I think a lot of that just came from the fact that Noah and Allie met when they were 17 years old.
And when you're 17, sparks fly.
Good God, do they fly.
Taylor Swift.
Like, you can't have a losing your virginity scene like you have in The Notebook without being madly in love with each other.
Oh, totally. And where they didn't even lose their virginity.
Stare each other down as you undress yourselves. Good God.
That was ridiculous. In like the old abandoned plantation house. Oh my God.
What a hot scene.
I do appreciate that the camera didn't show like any of them, because they were like supposed to be like underage basically.
Well, yeah.
And then, but then in the scenes where they reunite and then they make love, they do show them.
You see a little like side boob.
You see a little side boob, a little nip slip here and there.
Oh yeah.
A little side bodies.
There are some, we're just going to say, you know, there are some good sex scenes in The Notebook.
Good scenes.
There are some good romantic scenes. Like, you all know the scene where it's raining and they're by the boat and he does the speech.
What do you want?
No, I want all of you forever. You and me. Why didn't you write to me?
I wrote you every day for a year.
It's not over. It still isn't over.
It's never been over.
This is the part where we just reenact.
Noah! Noah! Allie.
But there is just like, there's so much passion, and I think it takes, like, back to Ryan, it takes a really talented actor to be that age, to be 23 fucking years old, and to play that transition.
Oh, that is a long time.
Like a 7-year difference. And it's not just like, it's not just, you know, like 40 to 47, which I feel like is a pretty normal transition period, but like to be 17 to 24.
That's significant.
Yeah, and you go through a war.
You do a lot of your personal development between those ages.
Yeah.
Simply just, you know, both biologically speaking and like experience wise. Mm-hmm. Like you live a lot of your life during those years that shape you into being who you are in your mid-20s beyond. Yeah. Right? And I think for an actor, because I didn't for a second not believe that he was a scruffy older man.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I did not for a second, like, I believed it every single second that he made that transition, that he had gone through war, that he had gone through building a house, that he had gone through pining, that he had gone through like the lonely points where he had to call on
the death of his dad.
Exactly. And, yeah. All of it. I believed it because I don't want to say he got sadder and sadder and sadder as the movie went on, but something inside of him, and going back to like him being able to act with his eyes, it was like there was light in his eyes that like was diminishing throughout, and you could tell the only thing that sort of kept him going was the thought of maybe one day seeing Allie again. And the fact that we can even get that from someone's performance is insane.
Yeah, like the fact that Noah is as silent as he is and yet still remains captivating because he says so much in his silence, but then you listen even closer when he does speak because he doesn't speak that often. Exactly. So you know it's important whatever he's gonna say. Like, that takes fucking talent. And he was a young actor when he was doing this, you know? So I think that's why The Notebook, despite the fact that it was, you know, just like a well-written, well-made movie, it's why, like, even though it is like a chick flick, you know, in quotes, we hate that. like, even fucking dudes who love film are like, The Notebook's a good movie.
I haven't met, okay, I have not met a single person in my entire life, like, dudes including, like, yeah. And we're talking, like, sporty dudes. We're talking, like, dudes who think that, like, chick things are stupid. I have not met a single person in my entire life who has said The Notebook is a bad movie.
Yeah.
Because it's not a bad movie. No. It's an incredible, it's beautiful, first of all. The yeah. setting is gorgeous. The fucking scene with the swans
oh my
on
God.
The fucking lake, that is beautiful. Mm-hmm. That is gorgeous. That is like a cinematographer's dream to shoot all those fucking swans. Mm-hmm. That's a fuck ton of swans. Oh my God. It's a gorgeous film. It's very well shot. It's very well directed. It's very well acted.
Yeah. Like, I think even without the like super sad element of this movie, which is obviously the storyline between Gina Rowlands and James Garner, because they play the older Allie and Noah and she has dementia and mm-hmm. she doesn't remember him. And oh, it's very sad.
It's so bad. Nicholas Sparks.
Like, why you gotta do us like that?
Why you gotta do us dirty like
every
this?
Every book, you do this.
You do this.
I would say even without that element of the story, it would still be a beautiful love story. Yeah. And I think that just, it extends to like the greater idea of that love stories and romantic movies don't necessarily need to have all of this like extra plot shit in order to be good.
Oh, definitely.
Like the relation, as long as the relationship is good, the movie is good.
Exactly.
And I think The Notebook is a testament to that.
Oh,
personally.
Definitely. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I rode you every day for a year.
What, like, okay, one more note about this whole thing. So there are a lot of iconic speeches in this movie.
Like monologues, if you will.
Yeah, 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 yeah. There are a lot of like really well-known famous monologues in this movie. And so not the one at the lake, but the one when she is considering going back to Lon and she's like explaining to him, to Noah, and she's like, you don't understand. Like,
you don't understand.
I broke a promise. This man gave me a ring. I gave him my word, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And they're like fighting about it. And they're standing next to the car and he's telling her, he's doing, you know, the speech where he's like, I want all of you forever. You and me every day, blah, blah, blah.
It's going to be hard, but we're going to make it work.
You know that one.
Yes.
He has a section of the speech where he says like the same line like five times.
Mm-hmm.
He says, what do you want? That's what he yes. says. And I'm always so fucking jealous of actors who are able to take a line where they're just told to keep repeating it and they make it new and interesting every single time. Because that is not something that I have ever been able to do.
That is not easy.
It's so fucking hard. And he does it incredibly.
Every single one means something completely different.
Yeah.
Every single one. And you can tell that every single one impacts her so deeply
mm-hmm.
because of the way, because obviously Rachel McAdams is incredible in this fucking film.
Yeah, she's like the perfect opposite.
Absolutely. Yeah. She's the perfect lead, like co-lead alongside Ryan Gosling. But truly, like the way that she receives each one of those mm-hmm. is like a knife to the heart.
Yeah.
Because every single one of those makes her think of a new thing.
Yeah.
And you can see it on her face. And like, they're just so fucking good together. 10 out of 10.
They really like bring all of those elements of what it's like to actually be in a real relationship. And I mean, it helped that they eventually went on to be in one.
I know.
But at the time, like, they didn't like each other that much. And so it's impressive that they showed all of these sides, like how you can have fights that are so horrendous and then the next scene, you see like the playful side of them come out and you believe it just as much.
Absolutely.
So you understand like all of the ins and outs of these kind of dynamics. Oh, it's just so good.
It's so good.
Go watch The Notebook. Like, what an amazing start for him mm-hmm. for his career.
Yeah. And you know, yes, watching it now was a little problematic because he really is very stalkery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And their relationship is a little insane. But just don't read too much into it.
I think when I watch it, I just go like, okay, when he was first into her, he's 17, it's 1940, he has no fucking idea like how to approach a woman.
He also has nothing else to do.
Yeah, so he's just like, I need to make sure that this woman knows that I am interested in
her. And that I exist.
Yeah, exactly. So I forgive it like ever so slightly because of that. And I'm just like, they're young. Like, he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. And neither does she. And once they do discover like the real parts of each other, they're like, oh, okay, we do actually like,
each
other. And this is fine.
I will say, as a reader of the book,
I also read the book.
Their relationship is not as like violent
as in the book.
No, like the book, in the book, their relationship really isn't as violent as in the movie. Yeah, yeah. And it, obviously, it's a movie. It requires different shock value points than like novels do. It's a slow burn with a novel. It has to be like a very, you know, fast spark with a film. And I think like them adding all those scenes where like Allie's like literally punching the shit out of Noah. And the only reason why she's inflicting no real damage is because she's like 2 feet tall.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. But like, I don't think, I mean, I totally see why it was included. I don't necessarily think that it needed it. I think them yelling at each other would have been perfectly fine.
No, there is like one little physical moment that I do think is really interesting for their relationship. And I don't even know like if it was written in or if like the director requested it or if it's just something it was, like, Ryan improv. Gosling came up with.
I don't know.
But it's when they're breaking up and she starts pushing him into the car and he starts slapping himself in the face. And you're just like, oh my God.
This is fucked but up.
You're also just like, this man would fucking die for this girl. Mm-hmm. So he's showing like, I'll beat myself up. You don't have to. Like this
is already hurting enough.
Exactly. Woman. Yeah.
Brill. So without you know, what's the word? Without excusing, right?
Yeah,
the physical violence in this film that I don't necessarily condone. I think that what they did with it was very brilliant in that it was, you know, we never saw him really like lay a hand on her, and the way that he showed his devotion to her because their relationship was so crazy. I mean, everyone has their own relationship. Everyone has their own, like, nuances, their own quirks, like, what they think is appropriate and what they think isn't appropriate. But I do agree, like, the way that Ryan Gosling handled every single one of those fights as an actor was positively brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, you saw him just stand there and, like, look at her with it, like, with those eyes.
Yeah.
And, like, love her, even despite the fact that she was, like, tearing into him. So, and obviously Rachel McAdams, tasty woman.
Oh, she's so good. She's so beautiful.
She's so beautiful and so good.
It's like aggravating.
It's aggravating how
beautiful she is.
But like the thing is, she's such an incredible actor and she's gorgeous.
Yeah, like it's disgusting.
It's gross. But anyway, without excusing all of that, despite all of that, it is still an incredible film.
Yeah, and a really, really, really beautiful story that, like, even now, still makes me cry.
Still makes me sob. Because they just love each other. And at the end, when they're holding each other in the bed and they go away together.
Yeah, and it's just such a universal feeling. Like, I don't think there's any single person who wouldn't want, to be loved like that.
It's true.
So... Well, really, I got myself there, Monica. I got myself. So now we're going to move on to... So, like, The Notebook was kind of a serious side of Ryan, but it was also, like, romantic sweeping Ryan.
Yes, it was, like, Ryan as the romantic lead.
Yeah,
Ryan.
So now we're going into Ryan as,
the
like,
gritty Ryan.
High-stakes, dramatic, gritty Ryan. Totally opposite of Noah Calhoun.
The dark goose.
This is Ryan Gosling in The Place Beyond the Pines.
Sorry, I was giving you background music.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, please go on.
The Place Beyond the Pines from 2012, written by Derek Cianfrance, Ben Coccio, and Darius Marder, directed by Derek Cianfrance. Oh, thank you for that lovely whistling, Monica.
You're welcome. I'm just trying to set the tone.
Thank you so much. So... Luke Glanton, or Handsome Luke, as they call him, played by Ryan Gosling, a motorcycle stunt driver, turns to robbing banks in order to provide for his lover, Romina, played by Eva Mendes, and Jason, the infant son he just found out he had. This decision puts him on a collision course with an ambitious rookie cop, Avery Cross, played by Bradley Cooper, who is navigating a corrupt police department. The encounter between the two sets off a chain of troubling events that examine the themes of father-son relationships, masculinity, legacy, and inherited trauma. What a film.
What a film. First of all, a moment of silence for bleached blonde tattooed Ryan Gosling.
With the word handsome tattooed on his fucking knuckles.
And I think he has like a knife on like the side of his eye.
The tattoos
that's
in
like
general
bleeding down.
Insane.
Insanity. First of all, again, some context. The guy's a motorcyclist.
Yeah.
If you can even really be one. I think the only way you can really ever be a motorcyclist is if you're like with a circus or...
Or like you're a stunt driver in like big like moto stunt shows.
Something. Yeah, yeah. But he's like a motorcyclist.
That first shot you get of him, they follow him from the back. It's a brilliant opening shot.
First of all, very quickly before you start with this, just to give a little bit of groundwork, this movie is beautiful.
Incredibly made.
So well made. If you have not seen this movie yet, because it sounds kind of familiar and you probably haven't seen it, watch it. It is gorgeous.
Yeah, I will say now that we're going to spoil it.
Mm-hmm. Sorry about that.
Like, and it is a pretty big spoiler.
Yeah.
What we have to discuss. So if you haven't seen it, press pause
the podcast.
Go watch The Place Beyond the Pines
and then come back.
Okay, so if you're just coming back, hello, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the movie.
Welcome back, baby. Let's talk spoilers.
Okay, so back to the opening shot of this movie. He's like fucking playing around with like a switchblade mm-hmm. in his trailer at the carnival.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
Then it follows him from behind. You still don't see his face. And it's a really long follow shot through the carnival. It's fucking brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take him into that like tent where they have the giant orb. There's a technical name for like the stunt that they're doing.
It's like a caged
orb. It's like the cage of death or the cage of wonder. Some shit like that. It's basically there are three motorcyclists inside of a very small,
and it only has one opening.
Yeah.
And you have to drive so fast that you defy gravity.
Yeah, and that you can like drive up the sides of the sphere that you're inside of, and then also miss the other drivers.
So
it's an insane stunt.
We're not like explaining this very well because we don't know two reasons. We don't know how physics works, and then also we don't know how anything works.
No. I know nothing about motorcycles, but what I do know is that it looks fucking terrifying.
It looks really scary, and it looks very like technically complicated.
Yeah. You have to be an expert fucking driver to do that.
So good.
Like, apparently, I think it was, like, the original cinematographer who was going to mm-hmm. be on this, like, backed out because he had a dream about dying during that shoot. And then the person that they did actually get did end up getting injured during that.
Oh,
during
my God.
Filming that scene because it was, like, so technically
it's
insane.
It's really complicated.
Yeah, it's fucking nuts. Like, what the fuck, Derek C. in France writing that into a script? So we're gonna have three motorcyclists at top speed, like just barely missing each other.
Barely. Okay.
But yeah, so like Ryan Gosling is this like he's a carnival like celebrity almost. He like gives autographs and shit. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, he's like a really well known like small town daredevil.
Yeah. Pretty much.
That's his whole vibe.
And then you meet Eva Mendes, who I didn't see her face first. Like at first, the first thing I saw were her fucking nipples that were like out to party when you first see her. Absolutely insane. I made my boyfriend rewind because I was like, you have to see this.
You
shit.
Have to see the nips, the party hats.
And the point is that like they, I guess, had met like almost a year prior and she got pregnant.
Yeah.
And so that's like what sets off the chain of events.
And this is insane. Like the intricacies of the plot. In this film,
fucking
are
nuts.
Fucked up. But back to the tracking shot.
Yes.
This is the first time, at least like up until the point that I had watched it was the first time I'd ever seen a tracking shot mm-hmm. that wasn't like Martin Scorsese. Like
oh,
that
really?
Was like of, but like of
oh,
that
like, of
level.
That caliber?
Of that caliber, right? Yeah. Like it was really fucking long. Like it was a very long one, but it was one that I didn't want to end. Necessarily.
No, like it was one of those things where like you're gathering tiny bits of information, like no one's saying anything. You're not like seeing a ton, but you're like really, he's putting you into the setting so completely so that when things do start and you are forced to figure out what the fuck is happening, because they don't like explicitly say a whole lot in this movie. They don't say
anything in this movie. They just show you the stuff.
Yeah, like things happen. You're like, oh, okay, I guess they slept together a year before. Like, I guess that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. So he does a really brilliant job of like fully immersing you before giving you like tiny snippets of information.
Mm-hmm. It's ambitious. I love it. I love a movie that gives you an ambitious opening. Mm-hmm. And this is one of them. And I think like, no, I don't think a lot of people have seen this film. Mm-hmm. And just tracking shot alone, like the beginning tracking shot alone, I think will suck you in enough to just fucking finish the film. I think a lot of films, you have to warm up to it before, you know, before like the second act, and then you're like really fucking in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Not this film. You're just in it.
And also, I think it was smart knowing like who Ryan Gosling is as an actor, what his reputation is. Like, he's a Hollywood like pretty boy, you know? I mean, he's not known for being a good actor. So when they do finally show his face,
he looks like
shit. You're like, oh my God. And but the thing is like, he is such a fucking chameleon. He's mm-hmm. so brilliant. He just...
You believe it.
Yeah. You're like, I have no fucking doubt that Ryan Gosling is a crazy, tatted, like, daredevil.
I want everyone to close their eyes and try and imagine Justin Timberlake with handsome Luke
yes.
tattooed all over his body. Mm-hmm. And then also knives tattooed all over his body. And then bleached blonde, but he looks like shit.
Yeah.
You can't do it. But you can with Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
Because he's that fucking good.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like... This role, it's a lot different from anything he's ever done, but I think that, like, it's weird because, like, the way in which Luke speaks and what he says did, like, in a weird way remind me a lot of how Noah speaks.
That's
in
true.
The Notebook.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because he, like, doesn't say a whole lot.
Strong, silent, and then...
But what he does say is, like...
Important.
Important, blunt. It's exactly what needs to be said. He doesn't like fucking...
He doesn't embellish.
No, not at all. So when he speaks, you know it's important and you know you need to listen. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting because it's like been over a decade and yet there are things coming back from like his early big romantic lead role that can contribute in a weird way to a big gritty role like mm-hmm. in this movie.
Yeah. This movie as a whole sort of like explores like the working class people mm-hmm. versus like the more like society, like the richer society types slash it also focuses on like the whole like this is gonna sound stupid, but it focuses on like the cops and robbers.
No, I mean, it does. It explores like authority and like the man.
Yeah. And sort of like this, I love what this film does in terms of like what you the lengths that someone will go mm-hmm. to do two things. One, protect and provide for his or her like own family.
Yeah.
And two, to protect their reputation or their pride. So like and Ryan Gosling does both incredibly well. You can see like within his entire performance from start to finish of this film, he's really just a guy trying to do not necessarily the right thing, mm-hmm. but the right thing for him.
Yeah.
The right thing for his, you know, what will eventually be his family. The right thing in that moment, whatever he thinks the right thing is, and that right thing may not be like society's right thing, but it's right to him and you can see it in his performance.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think it was very smart of them to not make you like necessarily root all the time for Luke because... I think at least I went into it expecting to be like, oh, okay, like I'm supposed to like this guy. And it's not that I didn't like him as a character. It's just that like he is unlikable in certain ways. Like he doesn't know like boundaries between him and, I mean, it's not even his girlfriend. It's just the mother of his child.
Yeah, just whoever
is
there.
And she is living with her boyfriend played by Mahershala Ali. An early beautiful role. So she's like in his fucking house and Ryan Gosling just shows up occasionally being like, oh, I brought things for the baby and I'm building a crib inside your house, even mm-hmm. though I'm not supposed to be here. Like, I like that I didn't know if I was supposed to be rooting for him the whole time. And yet there were times when he's doing like the worst shit and you are rooting for him.
Absolutely.
Like his first bank robbing sequence.
Oh my God.
Is fucking brilliant.
It's bananas.
It's so, and then like, it would have been enough for me as a viewer to just see him rob a bank and have that be it. But to see him rob the bank and then drive into the truck, the getaway truck, and then just start vomiting all over the place. So fucking hilarious. Like giving both sides to those kind of risky situations was incredible.
You know, I love the duality that Ryan Gosling puts into this role. I mean, part of it obviously is written for the character, but I feel like few men could pull it off as well as Ryan Gosling does. He is both fucking clueless and very deliberate at the same time.
Yeah.
And that is a perfect example of that fucking scene, is he just pulled off this insane stunt of like robbing this fucking bank and like seamlessly like driving into the fucking truck and then yaks.
Yep. All over the place.
Because he was fucking terrified the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. But like then it becomes really interesting when he wants to keep robbing banks and gets almost like addicted to, because it's greed, but it's also like, I think addiction in a way.
Well, again,
like addiction to the adrenaline.
Yeah. It goes back to like wanting to protect your pride, right? Like he knows he's really fucking good at this.
Yeah.
And few people can pull it off the way that he does. And if he stops doing this, like, is his identity like associated with robbing these banks? And if it is, then if he stops doing this, will he still feel like himself?
That, but then also like in the end, it's pride that, spoiler, kills him.
That destroys his life.
Because he is so addicted to this feeling of like needing to protect his family, needing to be important, needing to be a provider, blah, 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 that he just like, the thing that he fucks up with is so small, he forgets to take his sunglasses. And instead of just going back to get them or doing it a different day, he doesn't do it at all. And then that fucks him. And then he dies. And it's horrible. And mind you, this happens at minute like 48.
I know. Movie.
This is a 2.5 hour film. And Ryan Gosling fucking dies in the first hour. I was watching it and I turned to my boyfriend and I was like, things are amping up very quickly. And I feel like there's nowhere for this to go. How does this continue for over 2 hours?
Oh, still? It continues, baby.
And then you find out how it continues and you're just like, this movie is brilliant. I love it. This movie is incredible.
It's really two stories, right?
Almost three in a way.
Yeah, almost five. When I tell you, like, there are a few movies that come to mind when I think about the intricacies of the plot and like the different, like there's an A plot, there's a B plot, there's a C plot, there's so many different fucking storylines, but they work together very, very seamlessly and they like almost either mirror or complement each other.
Yeah.
And this like next portion is like the portion where it's like about the sons.
Yeah.
The sons.
Because first it's about Ryan Gosling, then it's about Bradley Cooper, then it's about the sons. It's just so brilliant. Like, it's such a brilliant vehicle to discuss legacy, to discuss like masculinity and inherited trauma. It's very like, Derek C. and Friends also made that a miniseries, I Know This Much Is True, with Mark Ruffalo, that he won the Emmy for. That series is very reminiscent of this. It's all about like generational trauma. So for whatever reason, that's a topic that this director finds very interesting. And I mean, I find it interesting as well, seeing how things can impact your later generations so deeply.
And you don't even realize it. And the thing is, they don't even realize it.
Yeah.
So like, you as the audience member know who the fathers are of these kids that you see, I think in like the third act.
Yeah.
And you know, but they don't know.
Mm-mm.
And you keep wondering what's going to happen when they find out. And you see sort of like their mannerisms and like who they are through the lens of their fathers, who you saw in the first and the second acts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's very, I don't think I've ever seen anything or any script or any movie do something where you see the flaws of their fathers in the children, and the children don't even know really what the fuck happened.
Yeah, and are almost like repeating the sins of the father,
same mistakes,
but in like an even worse way.
Exactly. And so, and you think, do they even know what's happening to them? Do they even know why they're acting the way that they act? What trauma caused them to fundamentally change their DNA and point them in this direction? Like, and you start to think about, you know, I mean, Eva Mendes is incredible in this fucking film.
She's so good.
It's probably
like her best role ever.
I think so. She's fucking amazing in this film. And like her misguided attempts to like be a mother are heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And so you see like the different steps in like the generational trauma that directly directly result in these two boys essentially like fucking hating each other at the end of this film, when in the beginning they were like friends doing bullshit like things.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's just a really brilliant movie. I think it's one of the most original movies I've seen in a long time. I think there is like this weird rule for like, I don't know why this became a rule in film, but it's like a rule, like you can't kill your main character in the middle of a movie.
Middle of a movie.
And for whatever reason, that's like a no-no. But in this movie, you kill your, well, I mean, he's not the main character anymore, but who you think is the main character, who you're going to follow forever, the guy on the fucking poster of the movie, mm-hmm. you kill him within the first hour. Like, it's insane. You're throwing the audience for the same loops that they're throwing the characters, and it's so smart.
It's really seamless.
Brilliant filmmaking.
What I love is you kill the main character, but the footprint of the main character is so large that mm-hmm. you see the legacy, and you see it all the way through literally the last minute of the film.
Yeah.
So the character is technically still there. So you technically have not killed off your main character. You've just killed off like the body of the main character mm-hmm. and left his bullshit behind.
Yeah.
Which is like the whole
carry
point
the rest
of the film.
Of the plot. Yeah.
It's, absolutely.
It's crazy. And for Ryan Gosling to, like, people love him in this role.
Oh,
it's
they
considered
love him.
Like one of his best roles. Mm-hmm. For him to have made such an impact in less
48
than an
minutes.
Hour. Yeah. Like 48 minutes of screen time. For a movie that is 2.5 hours long, he's fucking nuts. He's absolutely brilliant. The range of him as an actor and of this character, because he goes from like this like kind of dopey adrenaline junkie to being like a legit criminal to being nearly a murderer. Mm-hmm. And then when you see him finally die, like that last shot of him when he realizes that he's getting caught is like one of the most heartbreaking moments of the film, where he just like doesn't know what to do, so he calls Eva Mendez mm-hmm. and he asks her not to tell their son about him mm-hmm. and then he gets shot. It's really, really sad.
It's super fucking sad. Be prepared to like sob yeah. after that moment. And the thing is, again, even though he asked her not to tell his kid about him, his kid still has pieces of him
yeah.
that he brings along. And like the whole bit about like not being able to ever escape your past, or like not being able to ever escape like where you came from or who you are. Mm-hmm. Like that's a really big takeaway from this film.
Yeah.
Along with like obviously like the generational trauma and like having it trickle down if it's not dealt with properly.
Yeah.
And then like the cycles of poverty that happen throughout this film, and the mom like never being able to fully be there, and like it's just it you see it all, and you see the bigger picture, you see the really big map, and all you can really do is feel really sorry for these characters.
Yeah.
And feel, even though they're making these terrible decisions, mm-hmm. these terrible choices, you still really feel for them. And a lot of that is at the helm, like a lot of that is helmed by Ryan Gosling's incredible performance.
Yeah.
Like, if it was not for that, I don't necessarily think that the rest of the film could have been as impactful.
No, because I wouldn't give a shit about, like, where all of the bullshit started.
Absolutely.
And therefore, I wouldn't care about the characters who inherited it. Because I'd just be like, well, you're just
well,
fucking making
fuck?
Bad decisions. Like,
yeah.
I don't give a shit about you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, such a good performance.
So good. Go watch The Place Beyond the Pines.
Yes. So now we'll pivot into modern day funny Ryan Gosling, a side you like don't get to see a lot of.
My favorite Ryan Gosling.
You see like little, like there are little lines in like The Notebook where you see him be kind of funny.
Mm-hmm. There's a little bit in like maybe I guess more recently like La La Land
yeah,
where you see
yeah.
him be kind of funny, but even then like
he's still like the strong brooding type in a lot of his films, and mm-hmm. so this movie like there is something for him to brood about, but he has so much humor, but in such a Ryan Gosling way.
It's fucking funny. So anyway, this next film, this last film, if you will.
Yes, yes, yes.
The Nice Guys. 2016, baby.
Yeah.
What a year. written by Shane Black and Anthony Pagarossi. Directed by Shane Black. Holland March, who's played by Ryan Gosling, who people just refer to as March.
Yeah. Because Holland is a weird name.
Because Holland
for a man.
Is stupid. is a down on his luck private eye in 1977 Los Angeles. Jackson Healy, who we call Healy because everyone's getting called by the last names in this film.
That's how detectives do it.
Mm-hmm. Played brilliantly by Russell Crowe, is a hired enforcer. So like a mercenary or like
a hitman.
Like a hitman.
Yeah, kind of.
Hired enforcer is a really nice way of putting it.
Because he's not always killing people. Sometimes he's just like making people do things.
That's true. That's
so
true.
He's literally enforcing.
Ah, yes. Ah, yes. Who hurts people for a living. fate turns them into unlikely partners after a young woman named Amelia, played by Margaret Qualley, mysteriously disappears. Healy and March soon learn the hard way that some dangerous people are also looking for Amelia. Their investigation takes them to dark places as everyone who gets involved in the case seems to wind up dead.
Bum, bum, bum.
This is my favorite Ryan Gosling film ever. I have I have really great things to say about this film. I love this movie.
I also love this movie. I remember seeing it, not really expecting it. Like, I didn't know what to expect when I went and saw this movie because I saw it in theaters. Mm-hmm. And I was like, is it supposed to be funny? Is it supposed to be good? Like, I don't know, because it seemed just like the poster and the advertising. It seemed like something that could very easily not be that very good.
Mm-hmm. Very easily.
Yeah. And when I watched it, I found myself like laughing and thinking it was really smart. And I was like, oh my God, I think this movie is good.
Good? Dare say good?
Ryan Gosling is a comedian?
Comedian. So, okay. The introduction of Ryan Gosling's character in this film is iconic. The man's in a bathtub, fully clothed, and he looks like shit.
Yeah.
And it's the 70s, so he has like this like weird facial hair, and mm-hmm. his hair and his like the hair on his head is like kind of fucked up, and like he's wearing some bullshit like print, and the like wallpaper behind him is also like a loud print, and he's in a bathtub, and you think, what's wrong with this man? And he gets up and he's fully clothed. And that's when you meet this character,
and he's just like hungover,
and he's hungover and very deeply unhappy. Mm-hmm. And he's a single father and his wife died.
I just want to start by saying that, like, I think Ryan Gosling is a lot funnier than most people realize. Mm-hmm. And give him credit for.
Definitely.
I mean, like, obviously, like, the jokes and the scenarios were written for him. They're in a fucking script. But he has this, like, very, I mean, it all comes, I say it all the time, I love the way Ryan Gosling acts with his eyes, because like he has this very unique way of keeping his eyes exactly the same and his tone completely even though he's joking and like, you know, like giving like a nudge to his co-star. But like, you know, it's clearly a joke, and it's so fucking brilliant because it's like, that's exactly how Ryan Gosling would tell a joke.
Of course
it is.
Of course.
It's so good. And he does it like through the entire movie, even when he's supposed to be in moments where he's absolutely traumatized, like when he sees the dead body for the first time and he just like can't breathe and starts like making, he's like. Like he, it's almost like there's like a threshold of emotion within him and he can't like pass it. So only like air can get past it, but his face has to stay the same.
His face is the same.
It's insane. Like what a brilliant man. I fucking love him.
Excellent actor. If you guys didn't know, Robert Gosling.
Bobby Gosling. That's Ryan's little brother.
Roberto Ryan Gosling is a comedian. He's a stand-up comedian.
He's hilarious.
Anyway, when we first see Ryan Gosling's character, he's in a fucking bathtub, like fully clothed, and he's hungover and miserable
because he's a fucking drunk. I will say, the only part of this movie that like I can't like totally buy into is his like trauma, which sounds terrible, but like because it's such a funny movie and they don't dedicate that much time to like explaining what is making Ryan Gosling such a sad alcoholic, mm-hmm. I'm just like, you just seem like a sad alcoholic who doesn't give a shit about the fact that your kid is like taking care of your drunk ass.
Yeah. So what happened to Ryan Gosling's character and what's her face's character?
The daughter.
I don't remember her name. is that his, first of all, his wife died. You don't necessarily, I don't think you know why she died.
Their house caught on fire.
No. He burnt his house down.
Did she die in the fire?
She didn't die in the fire.
So these are separate events.
Two separate events.
Wow, I'm learning something today here on this podcast.
Yes, those are two separate events because he was the one who started the fire. And I feel like if he would have killed his wife,
it would have been a lot
worse.
He would
have been in jail.
This would be like a Manchester by the Sea scenario.
They're definitely two different scenarios. All of these sort of like traumas collect and like cause him to be an alcoholic.
Yeah. So I guess these are two separate events, but like there's also an element to his relationship with his daughter that I think is really funny and like lends itself to the film, but also is like fucking ridiculous because it's just supposed to be like, dad's an alcoholic. He's drunk again. Ha ha. And he just has this like very chill, like buddy buddy relationship with his daughter. And they never address the fact that he's like not a good parent and is drunk 24/7. And maybe we're 70s. Just supposed to be like, oh, it's the 70s. But also like if he's supposed to have emotional depth because of his trauma, I feel like that dynamic should be a little different. But because the movie is so good otherwise, I like...
You forgive it.
I forgive it. And like, because Russell Crowe also has like equally absurd intentions. Like you think that he has his job because of like some other bad shit that happened to him. It's literally just because his father fucked his wife. And so he's like mad. And so now he like...
He takes it out on the world.
Exactly. Exactly. All of their intentions are ridiculous.
So a scene that I can think of that sums up all of their intentions perfectly.
Yeah.
Is when Russell Crowe's character Healy walks into their house and the daughter isn't there. She's like out to go buy groceries. And Ryan Gosling's character marches inside of the house and Healy's come in to like break his arm.
And that scene itself is hilarious.
That scene is absolutely hilarious. And Ryan Gosling is like, please, please don't break arm. And Healy's just like, you know, when you go to the doctor, tell him that you have a radial fracture of the blah, 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 blah. And Ryan Gosling's like, wait, what? Snap.
And he's just laying on the ground squealing.
And it's so good. Okay, so back to like why it sort of describes all of their like intentions and their like relationships with each other. Is March is screaming on the kitchen floor and it's almost like it's happened to him before. Someone's beat him up, someone's come into his house, someone's done something to him. Like he has a gun in his cookie jar. I'm sure at some other point in his life it's been kicked out of his hand. Yeah. Like, of course, right? And like that's his life, and he doesn't seem very fazed by it.
No.
And obviously he's just screaming because he got his fucking arm broken. But it doesn't seem very out of the norm for him. Obviously, Healy comes in and he breaks his arm. That's very much of the norm for him, and isn't his only intention was to get money, really.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, you're looking for Amelia. My whole thing is like, I gotta break your fucking arm. Like, it's my fucking job. It is what it is. I'm gonna take an apple and leave. And so he leaves, and his daughter, not his daughter, but March's daughter, is walking down the road, and she has like Yoo-hoo in her bag. And he's like, and he looks at her, and he's like, well, you know, like, it's all good. Everything's fine.
Like,
and
your dad is fine.
And she looks at him and she's like, you who? Because she's a child. And he's like, oh, yeah.
And then she fucking gives him a Yoo-hoo. It's so funny.
And then obviously she's going to walk in the house and find her father like on the floor crying. So that's like, I think, something that sums up the dynamic so well.
Yes, I agree. I think like, it's like this whole movie takes very like real stakes and then gives it and is just like, but it's fucking funny.
It's like these really high stakes, these really intricate scenarios, and just like injects funny into them.
And also it's such a good movie about LA also. The same time,
definitely,
because it also makes jokes about Los Angeles. Like that fucking running joke through the whole movie when they're always in the Hollywood Hills and someone always thinks they're jumping off of a cliff and then they just drop down to either a hill or another house instead of dying. It's so fucking funny because that's so unique to like the landscape of Los Angeles. So it's like the only way that this perfect storm of like crime and comedy can happen is within this landscape. It's very funny.
It's like you think one of the instances that I'm thinking of specifically is when March like has falls off of the balcony.
Yes.
And then it's a hill. It's just another hill.
Yeah, you're just like, oh, fuck, he's going to die.
He's going to die.
Cliff. But no, it's just another hill.
But no, it's just another hill.
Or they push someone off and then they land on someone else's patio, like down below.
Well, they push off someone who's already dead.
Yes.
And he lands in just on someone's like al fresco dinner table.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's so good.
Oh, it's so good. Another sort of like very almost like a mundane scenario turns into a very high stakes scenario when I'm specifically referring to the scene when March is taking his daughter to a fucking birthday party at a bowling alley. Like, that's very father daughter.
Sure.
But he has a gun and he's going to the bathroom and Healy finds him there and he's like shitting on the toilet. And Healy like walks in like with a gun and he's like, I need to talk to you. And he's like so threatened that he like keeps trying to keeps kicking the door open because the door is like one of those like shitty like bathroom stall doors that like keeps opening. And he keeps like, it keeps closing in on him and he keeps kicking it open until finally he's like, you know what? Fuck it. Just turn around.
They insert so much really stupid, but like really fucking funny situational comedy into this that gives Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling just something like nice and juicy and funny to bite onto to like, it's like a nice little template for them to lay their acting into. Mm-hmm. It's so fucking funny. Like I love the moments in the movie where they let Ryan Gosling's character like feel smart for a moment.
Yeah.
Like when they see the post-it or whatever about like the Burbank airport and he's like, it's not the Burbank airport, it's the Burbank apartments. It's flat, whatever the fuck. And so they go and it's not that. And you're so fucking confident that like he's gonna get a win. Like Ryan Gosling's gonna get a win and he's gonna be the good detective for once. And then they get there and he's fucking wrong.
And the thing is, and the thing that makes it funny is like the punchline, right, is the fact that his face didn't change.
No,
his face was the same. His face looking at them like telling them off, being like, it's not, you guys are fucking idiots, dumbasses, pieces of shit.
Yeah,
it's fucking Burbank apartment. Me, like, it doesn't change. Deadpan, it was like, it's not Burbank airport, it's Burbank apartments. and then they go and he just turns to Healy and he's like, let's go to the airport then.
But then when they get to that hotel, because it's a hotel next to the airport that they go to.
So it's like, he was right, but he also was not right.
And it's one of those moments where you're like, okay, Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling make a really excellent team because they're in that elevator. And it's that really great scene where the elevator doors open and they see people like getting murdered in front of them. Like people are getting shot from around the corner. And like all these people are being assassinated and their faces are not changing at
not
all.
Not changing at
They're
all.
They're just watching it. And then they step backwards into the elevator and let
the close the
and
elevator.
They go back down. Oh my God. It's just, this movie's fucking funny.
And it's only funny because of Ryan Gosling's lack of like the change in his face.
Yeah.
And his steady eyes.
Yes.
It's like, he doesn't do his style of comedy, right? His style of comedy isn't like the wackadoodle, like physical comedy.
No.
It's not like the over the top, like facial expressions. That is not his like brand of comedy. Mm-hmm. That's not. So like, but what he does do is take the situational comedy that he's in and like is one flavor the entire time.
Yeah.
And of course he's like able to play. So like, you know, going back to that bathroom scene, he's able to like, you almost see him break, but he doesn't.
Yeah. Or like when he sees the body
body, you almost see him break. You think he's going to yell. You think he's going to scream. You think he's like, you think something's going to happen, but then nothing does. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it fucking funny.
Yeah. His like almost like lack of a reaction is so good. And like, I know I critiqued it a little earlier when I said that like his trauma isn't like fleshed out enough in a way, like it doesn't end up mattering that much because Ryan Gosling will only ever give you a layered performance. Even his like fucking deadpan comedy has layers to it and you can tell that there is depth behind those fucking beautiful blue Oscar-winning eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, he's just, he's so incredibly talented, even with something as, like, funny and wacky absolutely. As The Nice Guys.
And even with, like, the stakes that high, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm thinking of a scene in particular that's in the very beginning of the film when he's trying to find Amelia.
Yeah.
And the fucker is, like, in a disguise. A disguise, meaning, like, fucking sunglasses in the middle of the night, basically. And he, like, he wraps his hand in cloth to, like, punch open a door, because the door has, like, a window on it, and he wants to punch it open to, like, unlock it from the inside. Mm-hmm. And so he's wrapping it like he's done this a million times before, but the fucker, like, punches through it and slices open his fucking wrist. And he, and he's, and the... He looks at his fucking wrist and he's like, you see, like, the range of thoughts going through his mind, because he's like, this doesn't look that bad. He covers it. It, like, gushes. He goes, I might be in danger. But his face doesn't fucking change.
Yeah.
And then he goes, that's a lot of blood, and passes out. He's in the ambulance. He's, like, incoherently, like, where's Amelia? Bleeding out, he's like trying to get up and be like, I gotta go find Amelia.
He is the worst private eye ever.
And then the, like, the punchline to the joke is, because this is a whole bit, like, I think that this is just the fucking filmmakers having a ball. It's a whole fucking bit. He, like, he's wheeled out of the hospital, like, with his fucking arm all stitched up by a nun who's like, are you ready to find God? And he looks at her, no emotion, deadpan, looks up at her with his fucking cigarette in his mouth, and he's like, I'm trying to find Amelia.
Because he just wants that money.
Because he just wants that shmoney, baby.
This, it's a really, really excellent, like, role for him. Russell Crowe's also fantastic. Obviously, this episode isn't about him, so we're not getting into him that much. But he's really, really good. And just, like, the way that they team up with Ryan Gosling's daughter is fucking hilarious.
So fucking funny.
I will
funny.
Say that the crime they're trying to solve is a little convoluted.
I know.
Because it's like a porn is bad crime. It's really strange and has a lot of layers and different twists and turns, but it's still really good. And
yeah.
Also, if you like Margaret Qualley, she plays the same fucking character in this movie as she does in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
It's the same fucking character. The, like, runaway, skinny, like,
yeah, she's
queen.
Like, against the man.
Yeah. But the whole, I guess, like, the, it's not as convoluted, but it really, it's like, it doesn't make any fucking sense.
It makes it seem more complicated than
it really
think it is.
It's really about... Her mom is, like, the head of the Department of Justice for some unknown reason. And she's
played
the one.
Kim Basinger. Randomly.
Randomly. And she, at the end, you sort of, like, find out that she's, like, trying to hire these guys, the Private Eye, March and Healy. Healy just because he's fucking there. And the Private Eye because he's a Private Eye.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's just so fucking funny because it's just a mom trying to, like, reason with her daughter, but it's blown out of fucking proportion.
Well, like, she, it's so weird because, like, Ryan Gosling is hired by an old woman
mm-hmm.
to
the,
find
the, like, grandmother of Misty Mountains.
Yeah. To
the
find
young lady.
Her daughter, who's
the
a porno
porn star. Young lady.
And then Kim Basinger hired these, like, cronies mm-hmm. to find her daughter because her daughter starred in a porn film where she, like, reveals something political.
Something that'll ruin her mother's career.
Exactly. But Margaret Qualley realizes that she's being followed by multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
So she hires Russell Crowe to stop Ryan Gosling from following her, even though Ryan Gosling is following her thinking she's Misty Mountains, who is actually dead. It's like a very strange
It's
plot.
Very, yeah, it's incredibly convoluted. It's really funny how in that scene when Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe are right across from Amelia's mother, who happens to be the head of the Department of Justice.
Yep.
And they're, like, talking to her and she's like, find my daughter. Find out what's going on. And Ryan Gosling's like, yeah, we love what you do. Like, porn is bad.
Fuck porn, am I right?
Fuck porn, am I right? And he finally like agrees to do this with Healy, and he's like, all right, but you know what? We won't do it for less than $5,000. And he's like very proud of that number. And you can tell that he's like, oh yeah, fuck this bitch. Like if she's gonna like, she's so funny. Like we already have information. Like she's not gonna know what hit her. And she's like writing a check for $10,000. And the second that he announces it's $5,000, she's like, right, okay. And rips the check out of the fucking checkbook, crumples it up and throws it away, and then writes $5,000. And I love that the scene just shows how fucking stupid they are.
Yeah.
And how like amateur these fuckers are. And the fact that she's putting trust in them is hilarious.
Yeah, well, that's why they're the nice guys, not like the smart guys, the cool guys.
They're just nice.
They're just nice. And really, they're not that nice. They're just nice because like they end up helping like an old woman figure shit out about her missing granddaughter, who has unfortunately been murdered.
The young lady.
But their initial intentions are not nice. Like Ryan Gosling's just kind of like a dumb scammer in a lot of ways.
He really just wants money. Like for example, when he's trying to find this old woman's husband, and he asks her like, when was the last time you saw him? And she was like, at the funeral. And he fucking looks over like beyond her, and the camera focuses on her mantle, and there's a fucking urn that's like Fred.
Yeah.
And it's her husband. And he's like, well, I'll keep looking for like another bonus.
He's like, this is going to, I think this will take a while.
And she's like, I have a chick.
Yeah. He's just a dopey detective. And I think it's just like, it was such a fun role. I recommend this movie.
Yeah. Moral of the story is Ryan Gosling is a fucking comedian.
Yeah.
The man has comedy chops.
Shops, indeed. Shops. Yeah, and this was just a really fun movie for him to do to get to show them. In a way, I'm like, I don't even hope that he does more movies like this because I like that I only get to see it sometimes. You know what I mean?
I agree. I like that it's only like a drop in the bucket. Yeah. A drop in the bucket of gooses, geese, if you will.
Exactly.
And I love it. I fucking love The Nice Guys. If you want something to watch when you want something really funny and really smart, and you love like a nice duo and you love LA porn, not LA porn, LA porn.
I mean, if you like LA porn, meaning porn in Los Angeles, watch this movie too. You see some nice boobs in this.
This is The Nice Guys. Bow, bow, bow. Do you remember? 21st night of September.
The end. Okay, Monica. All right, so that was Ryan Gosling. We love him. We love Ryan Gosling. There are so many movies of his that you could watch. He's one of those actors where I kind of want to go and watch like every single thing he's been in to watch his evolution.
Oh, totally. He's like a butterfly.
We're just watching him, you know.
Evolve out of his chrysalis.
Yes.
He's clear chrysalis. That he sheds when he's out of his chrysalis, and he grows wings, and the wings fly, and he's float, and he still doesn't have an Academy Award, but he's fine. He'll fly, fly, Gosling, fly.
Okay, should we move on?
That was Ryan Gosling.
That was Ryan Gosling. He's incredible. So now, Monica, what have you dabbled in?
I have dabbled in pumpkins. I recently purchased my first pumpkin of the season.
Ever?
I just said the fucking season, Jessica. I just, the words of the season came out of my fucking mouth.
I just love to mess with you. I'm a classic jokester.
A classic prankster.
That was my big prank.
Whoa. I bought my first pumpkin of the season. Yeah. I have yet to name him. If anyone has any suggestions as to what to name this feller, I will post a picture of him on the Instagram. You guys will get to name him yourselves. He's really small. I don't like to buy big pumpkins. I don't like the way that they rot. So yeah, but I'll go ahead and post a pic and you guys can name him.
Hell yeah.
Maybe name him Ryan Gosling. I don't know. Jessica.
Yes.
What have you dabbled in?
Well, it seems like these days my dabbling is really just like, what new television show am I watching? Because there's not a whole lot to do.
What is it?
So I recently started watching on Netflix this show called Last Tango in Halifax.
That's not a real show.
It's a BBC show. So it's super British. And it's about this like these two old people who are like in their late 70s who haven't seen each other since they were 16. And
The Notebook.
They were like kind of sweethearts, not really. Like they never got together, but they knew that the other one liked each other. And there was like a miscommunication, so they never saw each other again, even though like they had intended to.
The Notebook.
Not entirely. And so now they're like in their late 70s and their like teenage grandchildren have put them on Facebook. And so they reconnected and then they meet up and they immediately decide that they're still in love with each other and to get married. And it's a fucking hilarious show. Like, I know it sounds like sweeping and romantic, but it's mostly just like really comedic and really, really funny. And so I've been thoroughly enjoying that because I love an English TV show. It's top-notch.
I love the Brits. I love their television. They make good shit. I love their media.
Yeah. So this is a good show. It's on Netflix. Go watch it. It's a good time. So now we have a daddy story for this week.
We do. Yeah. From who?
So my friend Allison. Hi, Allie. She called me and left me a voicemail of a daddy story. So I'm going to play it.
I was hanging out with my aunt and uncle yesterday, and I don't know how we got on the subject. I think we were talking about podcasts, and I mentioned your podcast and how it's called John Favreau is My Daddy. And then all of a sudden my uncle was like, oh, because he used to be a cop in Santa Monica, and he has, oh, you know, I knew a guy who pulled him over once because he rolled through a stop sign. The cop was on a motorcycle, and he's somebody who never lets people off no matter what. So he pulled him over, and John Favreau is in a minivan, and he goes up to the window, and John Favreau rolls down the window, and there's like six kids in the car. It's like 7:30 something in the morning, and apparently John Favreau just looks absolutely fucking wrecked. All the kids behind him are screaming and throwing shit and making a mess, and he goes, you know, you rolled through stop sign back there. And John Favreau goes, I know, I'm so sorry, I was on duty today to drop all the kids off at school. This is the carpool, I'm running late, my wife's gonna kill me. And because there was so much chaos going off in the back of the car, and because of the poor look on the dude's face, the cop was like, all right, just drive safely and don't do it again, particularly when you have so many kids in the car. And apparently his face just lights up, and he goes, thank you so much. God bless you. Thank you. Thank you. And he lets them go. So I thought that was a story that you would really enjoy. Just a little, you know, fun tidbit. And how everyone who meets the man of the hour, John Favreau, loves him. So that's all I had to share.
God bless you. John Favreau saying God bless you.
John Favreau disgruntled on carpool duty.
I just imagine. My wife's gonna kill me.
We're running late. I'm so sorry.
That was Ryan Gosling.
We love him. You Hunk. Love him. go watch all of his movies.
All of them.
Even La La Land, if
even
you feel like
La
it.
La La Land.
City of Stars.
Are you shining just for me?
All right, everybody. Well, we'll talk to you next week.
As always,
don't sue us, Daddy Favreau. I love you, Monica.
I love you, Jessica.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.